Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Revolution Radio. This is Dr. Kate, broadcasting, quote-unquote, from the Great Plains, Northern Great Plains. We're going to have an interesting show tonight, and I'd like to just, first of all, do a usual welcome and greeting to all, particularly our veterans, and anyone who is listening here internationally and who will be downloading the podcast. As you know, Dr. Kate's view is going to be leading a charge up on the Hill in early September to basically stop them cold and focus on the lack of eligibility of Obama. It's such a serious time for our country that we absolutely must begin to just be vocal about this and not let anyone get away with it. And as part of that, I think I'm going to focus most of this month on Revolution Radio, talking about that event and highlighting the heroes who are standing for our country and for our Constitution against the usurper. First of all, good evening, everyone. I see everyone in the In the room, I see two Dr. Kates. I don't know who the other Dr. Kate is. Brian Frank, hello, guests. Hello, no nonsense. Nancy, Tolu, and Tenacity. Very nice to see you all this evening. As you know, John F. Kennedy said, those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And we're approaching the point where it's looking quite serious. So, Terry, are you on Skype? I'm seeing somebody in the switchboard. So if you are, just let me know. So, okay, very good. Thank you. we're waiting for our guest to come in this evening. Okay, thanks, Terry. We're waiting for our guest to come in this evening. So we're going to update this evening on Lieutenant Colonel Terry Lakin, who is one of the heroes we're going to celebrate in Washington when we're there. And we hope to have a live interview with him while we're there. But as you know, his trial is, or his hearing, arraignment is coming up on Friday. And our guest this evening is going to be Margaret Hemingway, without the G, who runs the website and also is working very hard to get the word about Colonel Lakin. Sorry, I'm multitasking. I have a couple of updates I'm going to put in the chat for you. As we wait for her to show up. Next week, week after next, on the 18th, we will have Charles Kirshner and Mario Apuzzo to talk about the update on their case. And this evening, we're also going to be talking about Commander Fitzpatrick and the unbelievable violence going on in Monroe County in Tennessee. All of this related to eligibility. And finally, we will talk about the Third Continental Congress, presentment to Congress, and whether, in fact, listeners out there would recommend that we, as Dr. Kate's View, or Third Continental Congress, or just a bunch of concerned citizens, start sending that in. Okay, let's see. All right. While we're waiting for our guest, Terry, do you want to come on and say hi to anybody or to our audience? Great. Hi, Mama Cooks. Thank you very much for joining here. That's great. That's great. It's going to be a big show. Okay. Terry, yes or no? Okay. Terry, I'm going to give you a live mic just to also introduce some of your topics this evening. Okay. So, here you go. You're live, Terry. What do you got on your mind tonight? Never mind. Let me withdraw the question. Sorry. Let me put you back on mute.
Lordy. I've got a lot of things on my mind tonight. I've really got Monroe County and Tennessee with Steve Pigeon jumping in the fray with Walt Fitzpatrick over there and the murder that's taken place and how many of the local people are starting to come forward. I think we need to talk about that. I'd like to talk a little bit about Edgar Steele, the guy up in Idaho that tried to run for governor a couple of years ago. He's a well-known radio personality. They have trumped up a charge against him and thrown him in jail. And the feds literally put together recordings with a similar voice of his and done some really crazy stuff. And so I think of him as a political prisoner up in Idaho and somebody that we really need to start drawing attention to. There's a lot of things. Mario Puzo's report, I'm literally excited that you're going to have those guys on in a couple of weeks because, you know, what's going on with that FOIA report and the whole Sobarka thing. And I think there's a lot of things to talk about that, if we get opportunity to get to all of those.
Yeah, well, that's good. And I think our speaker is going to be coming on, and just our guest in just a few minutes, and she's only got about 15 minutes anyway. But, you know, the Sobarka is very interesting, and just sort of as a point of humor on the side, I remember like 2 years ago, his nickname was Barky. And, you know, because he seemed to bark in his speeches. And so everybody knows him as Barky, at least I remember, just a bunch of us did. And then, you know, it became Sotero. So to have this come out as So Barka, it's like, so, Barky, where are you from? Okay, well, that was supposed to be a joke, but whatever.
Well, you're not going to get a straight answer to that one, obviously.
Oh, probably not. Well, listen, Terry, why don't you, while we're waiting, why don't you go ahead and start with Commander Fitzpatrick and Stephen Pigeon getting involved. And I'm sure plenty of folks have seen the information, but I'm just going to go ahead and put the link in the chat. Could you start that for us?
Well, yeah. Are you putting the News with Views article
yes.
of J.B. Williams
yep.
in there? Because
mm-hmm.
you could also get to it at Jag Hunter. So, I mean, you could find excerpts of that. Actually, almost the whole article is at the Jag Hunter as well.
Okay, very good.
You know, it's a really interesting situation there. I think most of your listeners probably know that Walt Fitzpatrick lives in Monroe County and attempted to take an American grand jury presentment for ineligibility.
Excuse
and
me. I'm sorry, Terry. She's just called in.
I know when to shut up.
Well, I wasn't going to say it just like that. Can you just hang on 1 second, and then we'll introduce each other and then go from there? My apologies.
Whenever you need,
here we
go right ahead.
Here we go. Margaret.
Yes.
Good evening, Margaret. This is Dr. Kate, and I have with me one of my co-hosts, Terry Dodd. Margaret Hemingway, this is... Yes. Thank you. We were just about to launch into something, and then and so glad you called, like right on time. Thank you so much. So
you're so welcome.
All right. I will put the J.B. Williams piece in the chat just for my listeners. After we speak with Margaret, but right now I'm going to put in the latest update on Lieutenant Colonel Lakin. So welcome, Margaret. Please, thank you for joining us. We are very proud of Colonel Lakin and very grateful for what he's doing and everyone who's working with him. And I met you just, you know, over the website, so to speak, and you know that we're planning on an event in D.C. So could you please provide for our listening audience an update, what you can, of where Colonel Lakin is?
Oh, absolutely. He's, of course, facing what are called felony-style charges. He has his arraignment hearing on Friday. They did change the venue. I'm a little worried. If some people who plan to come, I hope they'll notice on that it is posted on the website that it's been moved to Fort Belvoir at 11 o'clock. And
where is that?
It's here locally in the D.C. area where I also live, and Colonel Lakin is also in this area. What I don't know is how hard it is to get there, whether there's parking available. We do have a map up on the website. And for people who aren't familiar with it, it's www.safeguardourconstitution.com. It has a lot of material on it. For anybody who's interested in this case, there's reams of information there available, and you can go through, you know, both his educational background, his military service, his awards. You know, he has a Bronze Star. He's had what I would call an impeccable 18-year military record. But after, like many of us, looking at all of the information out there about Obama and this question of his eligibility, his place of birth, he struggled with this and couldn't get anyone in the Pentagon to give him a straight answer. And after 6 deployments overseas, he was in Afghanistan serving previously. I just had recently a friend of his who sent a picture with others from his home state of Colorado at Kandahar Airfield. And amazingly, occasionally you'll get a detractor to the website who calls him a coward. And it's sad
wow.
that people can so misrepresent the issues and that they would stoop to such lows to call this patriotic, you know, hero, he really is, who's standing up to his officer's oath to support. important and uphold the Constitution. He understands the seriousness of that oath. He understands that orders are supposed to be lawful, and you have a positive duty to ascertain whether the orders you're following are lawful, legal, that the Commander-in-Chief is truly legally serving, constitutionally eligible to serve as Commander-in-Chief. But because of this, he's put his whole career at risk. You may know that people who stay in military service with 20 years, he's a couple years short of that threshold, can retire with a good pension and benefits for life. And he decided his country was more important than anything else, and that he needed to do this for his own conscience. You know, his beliefs dictated this course as drastic as it is.
You know, so do you believe that, at an arraignment, there's not really an issue of disclosure, or are you allowed to say what you expect to be able to disclose here?
A little bit. I mean, he's a sort of a different category because obviously, our tradition has been that criminal defendants are entitled to the right to discovery, to the right to have evidence to defend themselves. It's sort of a basic principle of our judicial system.
Does that hold as well with the Uniform Code of Military Justice?
It should. I mean, it should hold. The principles are really not that different.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this. I mean, I had been in the political world since 1980 when I first moved here and went and worked in my first job on Capitol Hill. And I've worked for 8 members of Congress and senators. What does surprise you is that you realize that we live in a political environment. And sometimes I sort of grew up in an old-fashioned family with the viewpoint that, you know, integrity and character and honesty, all those things mattered more than anything else. But you come to Washington and you realize that that's not always true. And we are again, an uphill fight against what's really been a propaganda blitz. And the good news is that because of the Internet, people are finding each other networking like they never could have before. The media deeply involved in this cover-up. I've called some of them out directly for lies they told the public. I don't believe that they're stupid people, but you're shocked at such sloppy reporting, and then you begin to think, are they reporting this sloppily because they're inept, or do they just agree with the president and they don't want to uncover something that would reflect poorly on him? And this is a real dilemma because so many people still read that newspaper that shows up on their front doorstep. Luckily, they're beginning to look for alternative information. The polls reflect this. You know, if you look at the polling that's done, you'd be surprised how many people have taken time to look online themselves and try to figure out where the truth is and not just accepting what they've been spoon-fed by the, you know, predominantly liberal mainstream media. And that's been an amazing phenomenon to watch that and to watch how many private individuals are out there doing their own research on their own nickel, you know, FOIA requests, lawsuits across the country. And this issue's brought so many new and wonderful, intelligent people into my life. I feel very enriched by that. I keep Lieutenant Colonel Lakin posted and informed about all the tremendous outpouring of support that he's received. And I know times are tough. It's hard for people to reach into their wallets and write a check for his legal defense fund. But some people have done that who are unemployed and for the first time in their lives. And it breaks your heart to see that type of support and to know that this issue matters that much to them that they can do that.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, you're a hero. And my co-host, Terry Dodd, just put in the chat room, Terry Lakin is a true hero, a living, breathing hero, putting the balance of his life on the line for his country and posterity. Those are the kind of people we want. Those are the statesmen. Those are the leaders. Those are the people who understand the Constitution and the scope of this is of the cover-up and the media ignorance is amazing. Now, let me ask you, who do you have lined up, if you can share with us, who will testify on behalf of Colonel Lakin?
Well, they're going to shortly have to present, you know, witnesses, and that will be done, I think, before too long. But as for Friday, all of it is going to be is basically an event where he enters a plea. It should be a short event. I don't expect it to go beyond, you know, half an hour in time. I don't know much more than that. I know the defense counsel it doesn't, you know, openly talk about what strategy is. But, you know, the key test, of course, will be to see whether Lieutenant Colonel Latham will have the right. He has formally requested, you know, the right to look at evidence that he needs from the state of Hawaii. And I do not know, you know, how the military – this is my problem as a person who – my father served in World War II, you know, volunteered like so many men of his generation did, and I worked, you know, 5 years in the Pentagon myself. I was a military legislative assistant on Capitol Hill. I love the military. My heart goes out to these people, but it's very troubling. I mean, if I were in military leadership today, I'd be worried how this would be seen. You know, these young soldiers who go out and are risking their lives in dangerous places like Afghanistan deserve to know that the commander-in-chief is legally in the job and legally giving them orders. They're due that. They're entitled to that. And I don't know how the military leadership sees this issue. I can't possibly comment on that. You know, this is going to be a real test.
It sure
is. The right to depose people in Hawaii that he needs to depose in order to get to the bottom of this. He's actually formally asked for a deposition in Hawaii as a record keeper of the State Department of Health and the production of all their records concerning Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, most people who are, you know, many of us are alive today. My sort of political awakening, I think, was high school with a teacher who came in every day and talked about Watergate. I mean, he every day was talking about John Dean and Ehrlichman and Haldeman. And the one thing I took away from that was you didn't keep things away from the American people. You know, that in our open and democratic society, the public is entitled to know certain things. Not things that protect national security, not sources and methods, the traditional things that government can protect, classified information. A birth certificate is not a classified document. There's no privacy right. This is where people get confused. There's no privacy right to hide information needed to know whether he conforms to the Constitution. I don't find any liberals who are really comfortable arguing that position, especially in an era where they have passed sunshine laws and FOIA, you know, FACA. All these laws are passed to prevent government from doing things in secret. They were the big champions of that. You know, they kept talking about the conspiracy by Nixon and the cover-up and so forth. Well, this is a sweeping record cover-up. And we need to know if he conforms to the Constitution. It's pretty simple.
Couple related threads here. One is just still wondering about providing support is, will General Vallely and Sergeant Harrington, are you free to mention whether either one of those will be providing support?
General Vallely has already been tremendously helpful, and we are so grateful to him for the things he said and done. And there have been, you know, recently, I don't know if you've checked the website, but another former general officer brought to my attention, I can't even remember who sent me the link, but it's a YouTube with Major General Jerry Curry, which is also great. He was on a radio show and asked about this and spoke up, and he's a, you know, former Ranger, paratrooper, great record.
Right.
It's wonderful to know that support is there, and I appreciate that this is not easy for everyone. And I think sometimes I even myself, when you first start looking at this issue, it's more complicated because there is so much propaganda. You know, you have to peel the onion, and you can easily do a 2-minute judgment and get it wrong. And sadly, people went to Snopes because they didn't know where to go to look.
Well. Yes. Well, Major General Jerry Jerry Curry, he was the one who basically came out and called on Congress to investigate.
Yes, and it's astonishing to me that, and I realize no one likes to be called names. I think one of the most effective weapons is ridicule. It is an effective political weapon. And what successfully has happened is that people who raise the issue. And I saw this happen to poor Bill Posey, a freshman from Florida. When he stepped up to the plate, because I'm sure his constituents were bombarding him with, hey, I have to present my birth certificate for, you know, sign up for some fifth little league game and to go to the DMV. And my gosh, I had to bring my marriage certificate to the DMV the last time I got my driver's license renewed. They wanted my marriage certificate on top of my birth certificate. So people kind of understand that. And they're shocked that you could occupy the highest political post in this country and never have credentialed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But a lesson learned. I admit I was shocked when I looked at this, you know, going back and looking at all the things that had transpired through this evolution of this issue, was to learn that Lou Dobbs, I mean, Huffington Post says this, but Lou Dobbs seems to have been ousted from CNN largely for bringing this issue up. So the consequences to being politically incorrect, you know, virulent. And you may remember, too, his home was shot at. I mean, I remember saving that little blurb going, you know, someone shot, his wife was there, was, I think, a driver. But, you know, the bullet, I think, grazed the house. It didn't hit anyone. But, you know, they're admitting that there's the connection with having questioned Obama's eligibility. And, you know, Posey was hounded and called vicious, ugly names. I mean, ugly, really ugly. And that is kind of a threat I see, is that profanity, name-calling, insult-hurling, you know, threats, and people shrink. You know, it's a constant relief once to shrink from that. And I have to keep saying to people, you know, don't be afraid of being called a name. You know, if you study the issue and learned it and you think you're right, speak up. You know, don't be afraid.
Right.
But peer pressure matters, and people function, you know, in many ways because of peer pressure. And it's a real fear. They don't want to be labeled, you know, a racist, a bigot. You know, this is what they get called.
And this is,
stand up and do the right thing and not be fearful.
Well, this is a very interesting trend. I've got to come back to one question in just a second, but Captain Neil Turner, you may have heard of his effort called the Stop the Treason campaign, and he is proposing that all of us go to our city councils and give a 3-minute presentation on the ineligibility of Obama. And you know, when I had him on the show a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, I said, well, how do you respond? How do you tell people to respond to that charge of being a birther or a racist? Because, as we talked about earlier, the left doesn't have any arguments but name-calling, because they cannot defend this usurpation. And he said, you know, turn it around and call them traitors. Well, if that's what you feel, then you're a traitor, because, you know, you're not supporting the identification of your president of the United States. And this is really on that line, because this is what's motivating me to go to Washington. It's just like, look, I've had it. Our country's been overthrown. So with that in mind, and agreed that it's a huge effort. I want to pose a couple of questions and see. See, you know, again, with respect, how much you can answer, so forth and so on. Now, there is a possibility, of course, that there's no birth certificate, and it looks like, you know, people will kill to prevent this information from coming out. We're going to be talking about Commander Fitzpatrick in Monroe County a little bit later in the show this evening. But in that regard, and if we go over to the military trial, no matter uniform code of military justice or whatever, if they deny Colonel Lakin's request for information evidence in his case to defend himself, that's a complete travesty of justice. They can't justify it and then sentence him to hard labor. That would be completely a travesty and improper and so forth and illegal. So what do you think are the opportunities or the options that the Army will drop the charges or find something else to do? Or can they really narrow this, you know, refusal to deploy? Can they really narrow that and just focus on that charge?
Well,
so that's a bunch of questions, but what do you think?
A lot of questions, and I spend a lot of my time trying to figure out how best to help him in this, you know, predicament he's faced with, and as you said, years at what they could call hard labor at Fort Leavenworth. That's not a pleasant scenario for someone who's safely served for 18 years with an impeccable military record. I don't know how I couldn't live with myself if I had to sit there in the courtroom and deal with this and look at that type of sentence that he is facing if convicted. But what I've concentrated on is telling people what they can do. So somebody asked, "What should we be doing?" And I said, "You know, I'm not gonna try to look at a crystal ball. I don't know what's in the minds of military leadership about this issue." But I said, my suggestion, and I tell everyone this, is that get the word out. I said, you know, I saw myself when I was up on the Hill in the middle of the amnesty legislation, and I happened to be in Senator Dole's office. She's my home state senator. But I saw the switchboard light up with all these calls coming in from people saying, you know, stop it. Do not pass this. And it made a difference. And I think people forget we are blessed to live in a society where individuals still can make a difference. You have a First Amendment right. You know, you can call a friend. You can call your congressman. You can show up at his town hall. And you forget, they forget, you know, that some people think they're helpless. And I keep saying, you have a voice. You have a pen. You know, use whichever one you're more comfortable with. You know, blogging is fine, but if you pick up the phone and talk to someone, or better yet, go meet with them. I said, if you can meet on meet elected official, look him in the eye, figure out where he's coming from, does he really know the issue? That's much better. And they do respond. They all respond to constituent pressure. Of course they do. They wouldn't be in the jobs if they weren't used to dealing with people and accustomed to it. It's part of their job. But it is our job to tell them how we feel and to try, if we think that they're misguided, to explain why they're misguided. I don't like calling people names. I tell my children not to do that. I think it's juvenile. And I told people who email me, if they try to call you a name or use a profanity, say, watch the language. I will not communicate with you if you cannot comport yourself properly. And they usually, amazing, you'll find they calm down. And they might be young people, but they calm down. And then you can have a discussion. And sometimes that's beneficial because they'll realize they don't have any arguments. And that's where you want to be. You want to be able to take this person and deconstruct the falsehoods that they may cling to. And mostly that's what this whole side is buttressed on. It's falsehood. It's a deck of cards. And we need to confront it vigorously, aggressively. I know it's hard sometimes to get letters to the editor in, but if you're a good writer and you work it, you sometimes succeed there. People read letters to the editor more than they even read op-eds.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're short. And you're looking at the name and the address to see if it's someone you might know. So it's a really good way to get a message across. But don't hesitate to go to the town hall. I'm so proud of these people who go to those town halls and stand up. One woman did in Delaware, and I saw her. She had her birth certificate. She was proud. She talked about her father in World War II. I immediately related to this woman. And I thought, you know, good for her. People are getting up for the first time. They may get, you know, get nods to their stomach, but we're going to have to do more of that. And a lot of people I know have always said, oh, you know, I don't want to get involved. And you've got to. You know, there's no choice here. And get in the fight. And I keep telling people, you've got to do this. You know, this is what it's about. And Cary Lakin needs your help more than ever right now. It needs to be, he needs to be helped now. A lot, I think, of his fate is going to depend on whether enough people speak up on his behalf.
Well, that is something that this blog and others are going to try to really ramp up totally, and that's why I'm so glad that you were able to come on the show this evening. And as you know, when we go to Washington in September, not only would I like to interview you not for our show again, but if possible to interview Lieutenant Colonel Lakin right there, but we also would like to bring a card with a million signatures and maybe $1 million to help his defense. We also plan to honor him as a hero, and our event, I think I've shown you what our event is, but it's small. We won't have that many people, but it's beginning what we consider to be just the focus on this usurpation, and it's just unbelievable. And I wondered if you had, I know that you, you've got to get to bed and rest and all that kind of stuff, but I wanted to just ask you if there is anything more you wanted to say right now or perhaps save to the next time. And if there's anything right now that you would like to say to have people assist this whole effort? You know,
Dr. Kate, I'd love to just pass one thing along to you because it was sent to me by a dear friend, and he worked at the Armed Services Committee at one time, and I think the world of him, and he's just such a bright person. But he sent me something, and I saved it because it was so strongly worded, and it made me think hard about the times we're living in. But to tell people not to be discouraged, but just to press on. But this is his comment, and it was an eye opener to me to read this. He said, "We're living in a time much like the French faced in 1789, the Russians in the fall of 1917, and the Germans in January 1934. The nature of the evil has revealed itself, but it's not yet consolidated power. There's time still to resolve the awful consequences of it if enough of us act courageously and firmly. And make no mistake, if we go down the path the others did, the consequences for Americans are potentially just as dire. We are not immune from the forces of history any more than these other people. In this context, I see Lieutenant Colonel Lakin as truly heroic." And, you know, that's from someone I think of as exceptionally bright. He worked with the Pentagon extensively, obviously, in his career. But it is also, within that, is a warning. It's easy for people to forget that Germany was an advanced power. It had culture. It had museums. But look what happened. And a lot of people don't study history. I mean, I'm a history major. But they need to. And, you know, we have had so many blessings here, but you can take them for granted. And
that
everyone
is for
needs
sure.
to be vigilant. Everyone needs to be vigilant, and everyone needs to participate. You know, get out there, roll up your sleeves, defend your freedoms, defend your country, and protect your Constitution above all. Because that has held us together. That's been the bond. And it's been a great country because we respected the rule of law. And, you know, we won't let go of it.
Thank you so much.
You're so very welcome. It was great to be on your show. Thank you so much for your support.
And thank you, and everyone, thanks for listening. Join the website. I'm putting it in the chat again. Thank you, Margaret. We'll be talking with you very, very soon, and have
You're
a good
so
evening, and thanks
you.
For joining us. God
thank
bless you,
you
too. Wow, that was something. Terry, are you there?
I'm still here.
Yes, great. That was really something. Not a lot to share, but you know, that she could share, you know, in terms of strategy and so forth. But what we were able to hear, I think, is very good. I wanted to let you know, maybe you had heard it, but it was Neil Turner who basically said he thought that the army would back down. What do you think?
Well, it's a matter of, you know, the game they play. If the person on the bench forces them to bring out any disclosure of real evidence, then the army may back down. But you know, they've set this precedent of this standing, and a military court doesn't even, you know, it doesn't operate under the same civil procedures that we do. It's really more of a penal court than it is a court like we go into. It's
fine.
I mean, even though we're dealing with government agents, they can even admit being government agents and still do what they want to do. It's a tough situation that Lakin's got himself into, and I admire his courage because it's more courageous than us not paying taxes or something like that. I mean, he's facing the brig. And I'm just praying for the guy. So I mean, I hope Turner's correct. I hope that there's people there with enough courage to force them to really face the facts. And I'm not convinced that's going to happen. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But I'm certainly going to be praying for the man.
Thank you. And you know, it was part of our goal as far as the Stop Them Cold group, and you know, our event in September is to go where Colonel Lakin is being held and to find a way to get the signage out there in terms of the military judges who are going to be seeing it, find out where those people are. Because there's this issue about, geez, the oath. And not in a way that calls people down, but in a positive way. You know, we're not demonstrating against, so to speak. We're demonstrating for disclosure here and for justice and for the rule of law. And if, you know, if my kid has to go and get a birth certificate to play Little League, for darn sure the President of the United States needs to put up or shut up and resign. So, but all in all, what is associated with a search for eligibility is not only this name-calling, but violence and murder. And so let's return to our topic on Monroe County and find out what happened there when Commander Fitzpatrick filed a treason charge against Obama right there. And so you were starting. We had this great interview with Margaret. So how about heading back there, Terry?
Well, I was trying to give an update for anybody who's not really familiar with it, because, I mean, I don't know how familiar our people and our listeners right now are really familiar with this case, because it's, you know, it's been up and down as far as being put out there. So I'm afraid to just leap into it without giving some background. Once Fitzpatrick got his evidence and the American grand jury presentment in front of that grand jury over there, they ran up against obstruction of justice, and they began to it took them literally months of time, because he went and got this one jury foreman removed and thought he had a victory. And then he turns around, and at the end of the year, at the beginning of the year, they appointed a new grand jury. Well, guess who was the jury foreman? The same guy. And then they started digging into it, and they found out that same guy had been the jury foreman for that grand jury in that county for like over 25 years.
What's his name again?
So, the one that was the
The foreman.
I used to know it by heart, but I'm afraid it's not there right now.
Okay, very good. I'll find it.
It'll come to me.
Okay, go ahead.
At any rate, what happened then was that eventually Fitzpatrick decided, well, this judge is in cahoots on this thing. He's the one that's been appointing this guy. And he recognized that there was a whole bunch of people that, you know, had been basically manipulating this grand jury for many years, which means there's a lot of people that have probably had verdicts, you know, or indictments put against them and have gone to prison that really should now be reheard, because all of their cases should be thrown out, because this grand jury has been operating illegally for over two decades. So anyway, Fitzpatrick decides he's going to serve a citizen's arrest on this judge. And he, you know, gets a few people. There's one guy, Huff, that comes up from Georgia. He got stopped somewhere on the way in there, but he was bringing his video cam, was going to, and did, in fact, video the whole citizen's arrest attempt. Well, what ended up happening was is they ended up throwing Fitzpatrick in jail, accusing him of all sorts of different trumped-up charges. And he's been arrested twice now. And, the whole thing has been blown completely out of proportion. Well, now they found out that the sheriff there, this Kenny Hope, Deputy Sheriff Kenny Hope, and also some guy named Jones. Let's see if I can spot his name real quick. They've been out harassing people, and they literally took this one guy, this Jim Miller, who was a Republican election commissioner, and they brutally murdered him in a Chicago mob-style slaying, and he was set ablaze in the trunk of his car. Well, you know, this has all been coming down, and they're starting to recognize that there's a huge cover-up with this Sheriff Bivens, and he's got, you know, these basically mobsters working for him, and they've been out harassing good Christian people, and apparently what has also happened is that there, over the years, there's been a lot of people that have been aware of what's going on, but they've all been afraid to talk. They've been afraid to talk to anybody about this, so you know, now the Tennessee State Troopers, the Highway Patrol, and people are getting involved in it. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation literally cleared this guy, Kenny Hope, who was immediately a person of interest in the murder of this guy, Jim Miller. And there's been harassment going on. But what's now starting to happen is that it's now that all of this is starting to really get some publicity and out in the open, people are starting to come out of the woodwork because they recognize it. As scared as they've been to talk about this for many years, at this point they're afraid if they don't come out and talk about it, they're afraid of what the future might bring. They're finally got to a point where it's more painful to stay quiet than it is to begin to tell the truth. So they're starting to get people now coming out to talk about all of the corruption that's been going on there in that county for a long time, and some specific charges are being leveled. Well, in the middle of this, guess who jumps into the fray? Attorney Stephen Pidgeon is now handling Fitzpatrick case in Monroe County, and he's already hit them with some orders, put in some motions to get some disclosure of evidence that could very well sink that whole county cobble.
And
if you want to...
Oh, excuse me, sorry. And also, isn't he, hasn't he been brought in to take this out of this Monroe County and into the proper court venue?
Well, I'm not sure what motions he's done in that regard. If you've seen something on that, you might know something I don't know.
But go ahead, interrupt you.
I would expect him to do that. That certainly crossed my mind, but I haven't seen anything published on that.
Mm-hmm. Because who can hear a treason charge? That's the key. But anyway, go ahead. You were about to say more about this issue with Stephen Pidgeon.
This started out about a treason charge on Obama, but now this case has actually gotten a lot bigger than that. It's because what they're finding is that this is a systemic problem that really goes all across the nation. And you know that Red and I have been preaching for a long time about restoring our grand jury systems, and we've been saying that the judges have taken control of it, that it's supposed to be a people thing, it's supposed to be in the hands of the people. The people are supposed to be able to judge the law. They're supposed to be able to investigate. Once they're called onto a grand jury like that, they're supposed to be able to investigate anything they want. They've got complete subpoena power. They don't have to stay on the topic that they're given. They can take a bill of indictment and completely set it over to one side and go after something else completely, including the judge that gave them the bill of indictment. So we've been talking about this, and we've been talking about educating people to this. And this now is showing just how deep and broad this problem is, that our grand jury system has really been corrupted and manipulated by the judiciary and by the prosecuting attorneys, and even law officers have been involved in corrupting our grand juries. This is a major reason why we do not have standing as citizens in our states and across the country. This really points to the whole affair. And if they can start a domino with this, Kate, this could be huge. Because if we as citizens begin to recognize, like we knew back in the 1800s, that the grand jury is really where we're supposed to be holding these people and these elected offices accountable, we're not supposed to have to wait until 2 years from now in November to vote them out. We're supposed to be able to use our grand jury systems to put these real criminals in jail. And now we see blatantly, it's out there where nobody can deny it at this point, that this is precisely what's going on across the country. This is a major key on how we can take our country back, how we can get our constitutional republic back. If people start breaking their oaths of office and we start prosecuting them and putting them in jail, which is where they belong, and it's the grand juries that have the power to do that. And people need to understand this. They need to understand that vote is more important than their vote at the ballot box.
It's pretty significant what is going on here, and you're right, because the systemic corruption is everywhere, and it's infected every judge in this country. And when we think about the history we've written about and talked about and discussed on this show. This has been a very deliberate strategy over clearly the last 30, if not, you know, clearly 100 years, but if you want to look at it, about 50 years of training these people who basically are undermining our Constitution. Talk with any lawyer today. The Constitution isn't relevant to their practice. It's really kind of interesting. Now, so the jury issue, this is another piece of this. So this also relates to, well, actually I have to go back here. Now, why the focus on the Republican, why the murder of the Republican chairman?
Well, they believe that he was bringing out some election fraud. They think the belief was that the reason they bumped him off is because he had evidence on some of these people that went back to the 2008 election. And whether or not he was about to shine a light on some of that, is not really known for sure at this point. But that's what they believe. They believe that he was about to put somebody in trouble with the evidence that he had.
And, you know, election fraud, again, raises, you know, connected to Obama eligibility. So let's look at the murders here. You know, not only aside from the 11 terrorist attacks inside our country since Obama became president, we've had Lieutenant Quarles Harris murdered in front of his church. He was the witness who was cooperating on the passport break-in. And now we find out about this passport information on Stanley Ann Dunham, and find out that we're talking about Sobarka, somebody. Like I say, Sobarky. What's going on? Okay, so Quarles Harris, this Republican chairman, look at the sanctions against the attorneys. There have been other mysterious bump-offs. Have you ever seen spies, Russian spies, eliminated so quickly out of our country that no one had a chance to examine what they were looking at? So this is serious business. This is serious business. One thing go ahead.
Honestly, Kate, I have a pretty good sense of humor. I mean, you know that I'm kind of a flippant guy. And
you do?
But I'm kind
just
of a flippant guy.
Yeah.
But lately I'm not laughing. You know, I see things like this one email that goes around that talks about this belongs in the email hall of fame, and it's got Obama like the Pied Piper and stuff. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, people, you don't get it. This is serious. This is
right.
Not laughable. This is not funny. This is not topic for humor. It's real. We're talking about our lives. We're talking about a police state. We're talking about an attack on our country where people are literally dying, and it's going to get worse. And we can't be laughing about this. It's too cotton picking serious to be laughing about.
Well, that's what's clearly motivating me to, you know, not necessarily to stop blogging, but to, you know, to just get to D.C., but to also do anything locally that I can, because it is not funny anymore. It is not. And it's not cute. And, you know, the increasing intensity of the attacks against people who are looking at this stuff to the extent of murder just goes to show you how deep this is. I feel like...
Well, how much of this do you think Terry... How much of this do you think Terry Lakin is laughing at right now?
None of it. Absolutely none of it. I mean, there's a piece in there as well regarding Lakin, which is, you know, it's not the birth certificate either. But, you know, I can understand people going at it because he can't produce it. He doesn't have it. He cannot produce it. There is no birth certificate from Hawaii, in my view.
Right.
Or if there is, it says what he doesn't want it to say on it. I mean, how stupid can the guy be not to change his name?
What are we hearing out of, what's his name, Tim Adams?
Yeah. Well, not that much. I hope he's still, you know, still doing the work. But look at that stuff that came out. You know, and just, again, people ignoring it.
or just to the point, well, so what? You know, let's just let him stay in another couple of years, and, you know, there it is, and I don't think there's that time. So this brings me to, again, our event in September. Reverend Manning is going to join us on September 6th with the opening ceremony, which will be at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall. And, you know, we're really asking for prayers for this effort and for the alertness. And a great deal of what we're doing, Terry, is public education. We don't expect, you know, we don't expect thousands of people. But those who are there are going to see some very accurate signage and so forth. We are also talking about actually getting in there and making a presentment to the Congress, and in particular the Congressional, you know, Constitutional Committee or the Senatorial Constitutional Committee. But even though, you know, they're so arrogant, we don't think they're going to do anything, of course, but just to begin to pressure them. So what about a presentment at this time? And the presentment I'm talking about for our listeners is in Article 13 of the Articles of Freedom produced by the Continental Congress. And it basically consists of two parts, and the second part is a presentment to Congress that basically requests their examination. So what about this, Terry? Is it worth it? Does it have to, should be the Third Continental Congress? Can it be anyone who submits this presentment? You know, and do we do what Neil Turner has done, which is just take all of this stuff as well to Congress? So your thoughts on that. What do you think?
Well, you know my feelings about it. I've shared it with your group, your platoon, as you call it.
Yeah.
That I think that we've got to change the dialogue or the attack and focus it really where it belongs, so that they can't resist by calling you a racist. If you go up there and you go after Obama directly with your signs and that sort of thing, they're just going to try to label you. But we need to be going after the judiciary, we need to be going after the media, and we need to be going after the Congress with this particular attack, because they're the ones that need to be held accountable, and we need to educate the public on the fact that they are complicit in this.
Well, based on those comments, which were extraordinarily helpful, our plan is essentially what we're going to do is go to Congress. All of the office buildings of the House, and this is, you know, not just to get in their face, but this is basically to educate, you know, as well, if we can get meetings. We are also going to assemble outside the Justice Department and the Supreme Court and finally outside the White House. So it is broadened. We agree with your statement. It's and that's why we're calling it, you know, the constitutional, as opposed to the platoon, which I personally like, but it's called the Constitutional Accountability Project. And, you know, you could call it our own cap and trade, because it's cap, and we expect it to result in the trade-in of all of those guys up there. Because right now, the law, our point is to say, look, Miss Prison, hello. And, you know, I'm hopeful that all of the employees of every one of those entities gets to see the Miss Prison handout and so forth. So from there, covering those bases, let me ask you again about the presentment.
Well, as also I said, I mean, all of this is relevant. The whole Articles of Freedom is relevant. You know, your eligibility article is relevant, but the long and the short of it is so far everybody we put this stuff in their hands, either they, you know, you come back to them 2 weeks later and you find out they haven't read it. So we've got to really come with a short, sweet message that is going to be quickly and easily perceived without being too complex. I think you got to drive a simple message home. And yes, you'll serve those documents on them, you know, serve it to a lot of people. But at the same time, you just can't expect that complex of a message to be understood or perceived, or that anybody's going to take the time to read a lot of material. So we've got to keep it simple. It's a KISS method.
Well, yeah. And, you know, of course, they can't bother to read their own bills. But, you know, not only a simple here it is statement, but I think that those people need to see that, need to see the presentment, for heaven's sakes. You know, they're all lawyers anyway, most of them up there. So, but yeah, it's going to be hopefully significant, and hopefully it starts a roll. And we would like, Ashley, and I'm calling everybody who's listening, is to have the simultaneous events across the country and just constantly do this. And one of the ideas that came across from one of our favorite bloggers, Papoose, you know Papoose, who suggested, you know, we need to start walking out. And maybe this is part of it. I know people have proposed national walkouts on taxes and various other things, but maybe we need an eligibility walkout. Starts at lunchtime, for example, randomly, but basically to start walking out. Because at this point, I mean, our whole goal with Stop Them Cold is to basically stop them, to say stop. Stop doing what you're doing until you deal with this threshold issue. And, you know, we challenge all Tea Party people and all 912ers to join us, but they won't. And this is the issue of the name-calling that people are afraid of. And the left has mastered that, and we need to call them names back in the sense of, look, okay, at least I'm not a traitor. I'd rather be a birther than a traitor. And literally, as you were saying, it's not funny. It's true. Anyone who keeps ignoring that, I mean, where are they? Where is their head at?
Well, how many times have we heard in the last 5 years, you're not questioning my patriotism, are you? And then, of course, the person that's speaking says, oh, well, no, I'm not questioning your patriotism. And I'm thinking the whole time, why not? Why not question their patriotism?
Yeah.
They are anti-American. They are against our republic. They're against our Constitution.
Right. I mean, I feel like no more Mr. Nice Guy. You know, it's just like I am questioning your patriotism. And like Obama, it's okay to do this or, you know, but you can't question my citizenship. Hello, I'm questioning your citizenship. Who are you? You know, are you even an American? You know, it's just time for that to come forward. I mean, I can't stand it where we are, Terry. I can't stand it. And what, you know, part of the other focus of getting more active is I recall being in the chat room on Patriot's Heart when General Vallely was talking. And, you know, he was laying out his speech and calling for the resignation and so forth and so on. Everyone was really excited. I think there were hundreds of people in the chat room that night. And I remember when, you know, people were saying, what can we do? What can we do? And, you know, the general said, get off your ass. And I remember in the chat room that everyone had a really bad reaction, including myself. Like, what do you mean get off my ass? I've been working, I've been doing this. And then here I sit realizing, you know, oh, I get it. We really have to get more vocal and make this just stop. So I'm just putting it out there for the record in case the general is listening that I am getting, like, our Stop Them Cold group are getting off our respective tails and getting going. But again, part of this effort, you know, and why I brought up the general and why I'm bringing up Neil Turner was another thing that Neil Turner said when he was on Revolution Radio. And he said it in a way, of course, that you can't, you know, you just don't know, but the question was, what's the military doing? What's the military doing? And, you know, the answer was, well, you've got people out there who are saying something, so that's a good indication that the military is concerned. And then, you know, we kept pressing, and he said, well, let me put it this way. How much advance notice did you think the Honduras Army gave, you know, the president that they were coming to get him? So it was like, oh, okay. Now, we never have known what the trigger point will be. The other thing that Neil said, maybe I'm just a hopeful person, he said that he thought it would, that this would happen before November. I'll just be frank, in my correspondence with the general and with Captain Turner and with others, I want our effort to demonstrate, and as if we can get as many people across the country to act in sympathy with this, you know, at the same time or in the same vein, as a signal ourselves that if the military acts, we're behind them, because this is so serious at this point, we can't move further. And I agree with Margaret, who said, you know, about our troops deserve to know this, as if we have an illegal commander in chief, any of our troops can be accused of war crimes and brought before The Hague. There are no protections for our troops. So let me get off my soapbox for a second. What do you think? That was a mouthful. Sorry.
Well, I'm sorry. My mind was actually on a completely different place. I apologize.
Okay.
Seriously, I was thinking about Schaefer Cox, and I was thinking about the fact that we've got to get organized in our local counties and our local precincts, and we've got to pull people together in our local communities, because if we don't, none of this is going to matter. You mind if I go there? Can I talk about that?
Go ahead. No, go ahead. Right. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know how many of you know who Edgar Steele is. I had an occasion last year to learn about Edgar Steele. There were some people who were not going to go down to the Jekyll Island Project to meet with the leadership of all of the various patriot groups in May of 2009. There was a few people that decided not to go, like I won't name names, I guess, but Oath Keepers and Committees of Safety and some groups like that that were concerned about Edgar Steele's reputation as a white supremacist. And the reason he had gotten that reputation was because he was an outspoken radio personality, and he had been going after the Khazars. As a matter of fact, he had even had a segment on his radio show that he called Name That Jew, and people would call in from all over the country and name one of the Khazars, the Ashkenazi, and talk about what that particular person had done against our country and some of the traitorous things and some of the business corruption and, you know, all of the various Bilderberger kind of international bank lord kind of crimes that they had done. And he got this reputation. Well, Edgar Steele's also an attorney, and on a couple of occasions he's represented white supremacist groups. And so the ADLs had him as a poster child for a number of years. And, of course, Paul Venable, who you and I have met, he was a delegate at St. Charles, as the head of the Constitution Party in Idaho, had kind of worked against Edgar Steele running as governor a couple of years ago. And so contacts were made to Venable and to Steele, and they did, in fact, attend together to the Jekyll Island Project with all of the leadership and kind of talked through some of their stuff. Now, I don't think they walked away, you know, feeling like they were blood brothers or anything, but at least they were facing some of this stuff, and it was determined by, you know, people like Jack McLam and some others up in Idaho that Steele really was not what the ADL had tried to, you know, to demonize him to be. Well, now he's continued to be outspoken. And the feds have literally gone and trumped up charges against him for putting out a hit on his wife. And they actually put together a recording that had a voice on it very similar to Edgar Steele's. I mean, we're talking some high-tech corruption going on here that are framing this man, and they put him in jail and won't let him bail out. And his wife listened to this recording, and she saw through it. And she recognized that it was not his voice. She told him it wasn't his voice. But they still got this man in jail, and they put him in jail about a month ago. Well, I'm comparing this story with Schaefer Cox. You look at Schaefer's situation up in Alaska. If he hadn't had 10,000 militia people that knew him and supported him, and 3,500 of those under his direct command, and this is a young man in his mid-20s. He's like 26, 27 years old. And they had the Child Protective Services trumping up charges against him. They tried to get him on illegal weapon possessions. They tried to get him on domestic abuse, but his wife wouldn't testify. you know, because they tried to convince her that she was being abused. And, I mean, they trumped up all these charges on him. And finally, Child Protective Services found a corrupt judge that would issue a warrant for them to go pick up and try to kidnap Schaefer's son. Well, Schaefer had gotten wind of all this because he knows so many people, and people were telling him what was going on from the inside. So he's out living in safe houses in all these various militia people's houses. He's living out there, so they can't find him. They can't kidnap his son because they can't find where he's at. So they go to the highway patrol, and they say to the highway patrol, we want you to serve this warrant. And the highway patrol said, do you know who that is? And they go, yeah, we know who it is. And he said, well, we're not going to participate in this. You want us to go out there and start a war? And so Schaefer was able to get his attorney then to go back into court and tell him that this was political harassment. And the judge dropped, not the same corrupt judge, but another judge, rescinded those orders and completely dropped all charges against him. But the reason that happened was because he had the community behind him. He had militia people. He had good, solid citizens that were willing to cover for him and to stand up for him. And the state patrol knew that this was somebody that had this kind of power within the state and wouldn't touch him. Now, you compare that with Edgar Steele, who's in jail for the last 30 days. Same exact situation, trumped up charges. If you don't think that it's important to get out there and to get organized in your local community, you're not going to be able to take control of your put a statesman into office if you don't do it. You're not going to, you've got to go get to know your sheriff. You've got to be able to take care of things in your own community, and people have got to know who you are. You can't just sit and hide and expect to be protected. Edgar Steele, the one problem with him was that he didn't have a militia. If he had a militia in Idaho in the same way that Schaefer did, he wouldn't be in jail right now.
And for our listeners who are not familiar with our use of the term militia, could you please describe that for how you see Schaefer using it and others?
Well, you helped write that definition.
Terry, come on.
I posted,
you have a better voice than I do.
I'm pulling it up here. I'm going to pull it up and post it in the chat room so people
okay.
can see the doggone.
All right. Well, it's a constitutional defense force. And just as interesting, you know, I moved to a new community just recently, and just coincidentally, last night, there was a community safety social. And it was all the firefighters and all the policemen and all the sheriffs and, you know, everybody who had anything to do with any aspect of law enforcement that had a hot dog and ice cream social just down in the community where I live in. And, you know, I put on my Don't Tread on Me t-shirt and went down there to talk with people about this, to sort of like assess if there was any weirdness or anything like that. Total embrace, and it was very, very interesting. Very interesting.
Well,
Thanks for putting that up in the chat.
Let's think about the militia for a minute. First of all, you have to understand that the militias back at the time of our founding fathers were organized through the churches. They had a group called the Black Robe Brigade, and you'll find some Black Robe Regiment stuff on the website today, where some of the preachers are starting to recognize their necessity, their need to get their local people organized, and for them to be prepared for whatever's coming in whatever way. And that may be arming yourself, it may be preparing with a good food supply, it may be getting to know people in your community. It may be, there's a lot of ways to go about that. When I think of the militia, I think about a citizens' homeland security force in your local community. And that involves everybody, every citizen, even those that are not able to bear arms, even though we've included the term militia inherently separate from the National Guard, means constitutional defense force comprising all citizenry capable of bearing arms and under proper authority in defense of themselves and the states. But it goes beyond that, because people who are sewing for the uniforms, people who are reloading ammunition, or people who are a butcher or a baker that's providing provisions, I mean, it really incorporates the entire community. But if you've got that kind of grassroots organization in your community, then you're going to be able to easily bring up statesmen. You're going to easily take control of your precincts. You're going to easily be able to put petition drives in to get resolutions in your states to stand behind the 10th Amendment and the 2nd Amendment and so forth. You're going to be able to get a voting group together that can bring up people who are leadership from that grassroots up. That's really what the militia is about. It's not just about bearing arms, because the whole arms issue is really in support of the militia, not the other way around. Our founding fathers had just fought against a standing army. They knew the danger of a standing army. It was their army. They were British subjects. So they fought against their own standing army to get their freedom. So we're in a worse shape than they are, than mm-hmm. they were then. Because we're sitting here in a police state. At least had the king was across an ocean. Right now we've got the IRS here that's not even a part of our federal government. I mean, those people are literally employees of the international bank lords.
Go ahead.
Well, my point is that we've got to get organized at a grassroots level. That's the answer. That's the long and short of it. If we're organized at a grassroots level, we're going to control our grand juries. We're going to be able to put a judge that's in your county. If you've got control of your county and organized at the grassroots level, you think you're not going to be able to get a judge thrown off the bench? I mean, you can control everything. If you can control it at the local level, you got to control it at your county level, and the counties have got to come together and control it at the state level. That's the only way we put the monster in Washington, D.C. back in the cage. Absolutely, the only way you get the monster back in the cage.
Right. And, you know, I think everyone should know, especially in the West, in terms of the qualifications for a sheriff, you do not have to have a huge law enforcement background to be sheriff. And, you know, of course it's helpful and you have to be familiar with all of that. But at the same time, you know, it's more important for the sheriff to have a constitutional background, in my view, than anything else. Because with relation to the IRS, your sheriff is your last line of defense. If they show up to confiscate your property, you have to ask them for not only a court order, but you call the sheriff and ask these guys to get off your property, because they are not federal agents.
Right.
You know, they like to claim to be. So this is, I agree, and that's why this community social I thought was extremely interesting. I haven't seen that happen in a lot of places, but, you know, that's just me. I've probably been too focused on blogging. But I believe as well in the local organization. Now, when you talk about some of the churches beginning to realize this, are these the non-incorporated churches?
Well, some of them are. They're
Mm-hmm.
Some of, I mean, once
your
eyes are open.
Are there incorporated churches that are starting to do this as well? Or
yes, there are.
Mm-hmm, very good. And
I don't believe that the Black Road Regiment is all unregistered churches. I believe some
mm-hmm.
of them are still incorporated. And it's tough. It's easier to start a church without being incorporated than it is to take one from being a 501c3
mm-hmm.
and go backwards. I mean, just ask Greg Dixon that in the And I think your producer, Janet Barnes, can certainly chime in on this, because she has attended that Indianapolis temple when they were going through their troubles some years ago, when the IRS literally came in to bulldoze their building because they had been a 501c3 and were trying to unregister or unincorporate. And, you know, that's a more difficult task, really.
And for those who are not alerted to that, who are listening, basically churches are tax exempt anyway, but getting an additional tax exempt certification, a 501c3 certification from the government, just basically restricts your ability to be truthful with your congregation. And as you said, the militias started with the churches, and so much started with the churches. The Sons of Liberty, I bet, too, but the Black Robe Brigade, that sounds great to me. I'm going to do some more reading up about that. So you know, the kind of organization we need to have definitely look like that, but also eyes and ears. You know, right now in a lot of Western areas, and you think about just counties that cover thousands of square miles that really only have one sheriff on patrol. And so what is it about, you know, protecting your county or your city or your town? These kinds of eyes and ears, of course, the image of Paul Revere is coming across, but at that time, people had muskets right at their door. And so forth. So, would be the days if we could get this back. But also, militias being demonized, that word. Anyway, go ahead.
Back then, every household was required to have an arm in their house. A widow could literally be fined for not buying her son a gun. And they would provide a gun if they had to make sure every household was armed. And, you know, you start studying this situation, it's probably the only thing right now that's saving this country. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely the only thing that's saving this country. It saved us from Japan coming into invading our nation. One of the leading generals, I don't remember his name offhand, but he was interviewed after World War II. And he was asked, you know, at that one time when we were most vulnerable after Pearl Harbor and everything, you know, why didn't you guys invade us? He said, because we knew how well armed your citizenry was, and there was no way we could occupy that territory.
And the Swiss have that. Why have they never been invaded?
Because their government buys the weapons for the households. They actually
That's
provide.
Right.
The weapons for them, and one of their favorite pastimes is shooting events, and they have annual mm-hmm. contests or trainings. They train their entire society to use the rifles. So there's more to that story that I'm not going to have time to get into right now, but that's why they're not invaded. They don't need a standing army, because they are a standing army.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've got about, let me see, I think about 9 minutes, maybe 8 minutes left in the show, seven. And I just wanted to review a little bit to see, you know, where we are, because to me it all points to the fact that we absolutely must create a government that can protect us. And that right now the one that's there does not. And it has other objectives, it's not listening. So what we've scanned this evening is the scope of what happens and what is happening when we actually get at the most serious issue, which is the ineligibility and the fraud that allowed that to happen. Because this is now what's unleashing this 30 and 40 year strategy, is the imposition of that. And you can see everything that's yes.
Can I compare for a moment militia with eligibility?
Excuse me, please. Go ahead. Excuse me for interrupting.
What have they been demonizing the most for years? They have, you know, you look at Waco, you look at, you know, the Montana Freeman, you look at what they've been making certain all the way back to the turn of the 20th century, back at the time of Woodrow Wilson and these guys, is back when they brought about the National Guard. And they've deliberately demonized the term militia, because just like in the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, it says that a well-regulated militia, state militia, is necessary for the security of a free state. It's the only time the word necessary is used in the entire Constitution. Well, it is necessary, and that's why they've demonized it. Well, why have they shut down? Why did they have a media blackout on the eligibility issue? Why is it that the judiciary has refused to give standing on that issue? Why is it that the Congress, none of them would object, even though many of them were fully aware and knew that he was not eligible? Why is it that it has been a complete, total blackout on this topic? And demonization of anybody that even wants to try to raise an issue. And I mean with people like Hugh Hewitt, Okay? Why is that? It's the same exact reason, because they recognize the necessity of being a natural-born citizen, and they could not have brought down what they've been bringing down to put their Communist Manifesto implementation into our system without having somebody like this as a fall guy. And they all knew it.
Point. Excellent point, Terry. I scratched my head, huh? But that's right. Now, the people who have been demonized the most as well, you know, birthers, whatever, racists, we have been. That's right. We've been called right-wing, and that's right. When you take the long perspective, it has been the demonization of the militia. Right. And this is what we need is our protection back. Not only do we need to alert Americans to this, because every single American, I don't care what color you are, if you care about this country, you should be alarmed, completely alarmed at what's going on right now. And because no one has protected the citizenry, who's going to? It's time for those constitutional defense forces to come forward and to organize locally. You're right. So this really is like so frustrating. You want to go at the national level to do something, but you know you have to be at the local level doing something as well. It's just the work that is. So Terry, we've got 3 minutes left. Well, did I interrupt you again, or should I just finish this?
No. You're welcome to finish. I think just before we go, I think we need to make sure we put the request out that a lot of people need to be praying this Friday morning for Terry Lakin.
Yes. Thank you.
And for Edgar Steele. You know, Terry Lakin's an easier person to pray for than Edgar Steele, because Edgar Steele is easy to dislike because he's so abrasive and so he's so aggressive. And I'm sure that's one of the reasons why he doesn't have a larger group of friends trying to get him out of jail right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he has been somebody who has been really on the front of the battle, and he really needs people to come around him and to follow his story. It's just like that Jackson gal that was the ex-IRS agent, if she hadn't mm-hmm. had so many people staying on top of where she was and what they were doing to her and not treating her illnesses and stuff, she'd probably be dead. And they'd probably do the same thing to Edgar Steele. But these people are on the battle lines, and we need to respect the fact of where they are and that they're out there fighting for us. And we need to be praying for them.
Thank you. We can never underestimate the spiritual aspect of this battle and the need for focused prayer and intention. So,
and anybody that hasn't studied the Neil Turner video of his presentation to Carlsbad and finding out when your local town council is, people need to be on the move here in the next week to get that presentation done in front of their town councils.
Sure, will do. Well, please, going to close the show down this evening, and thank you all for coming. Please join Terry Dodd and Red Beckman and myself tomorrow on Walls in Our Mind, 7 p.m. Mountain Time. And to, I guess I want to say just remember where we are right now. It's in our hands. We have to rebuild and we have to replace those folks. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming. Good night. God bless. Thanks, Terry, very much.
Good night.100 years ago, how my father's
Do we find the cost of freedom buried in the ground? Mother Earth will swallow you. Lay your